Hello, this is Barbara Peters. I'm sitting here at Virtue in Scottsdale, sipping a glass of Chocolina and talking to Kyle Mills, who in fact has spent time in Spain, in fact, maybe home. How long has it been since you've been back in the United States?
About 3 months now.
Aha. From time in Granada. So, a glass of Basque wine and a conversation, pretty good thing, yeah?
Perfect, yeah.
Right. So, Kyle is here with his most recent book in Vince Flynn's universe called Lethal Agent.
Yes.
And a question I've asked him earlier tonight is whether, how Vince would feel, A, in this environment, because Vince was a pretty ardent Republican.
Yes,
and
he was.
Quite to the right. And during, I think, the Bush administration, he actually spent time in Washington as a consultant.
Yeah, and met George Bush and everything. Yeah, absolutely. He worked on, appeared on Fox, Paramount.
Yes, he did. So I couldn't help but feel when I read your book about Senator, what's her name, Barrett?
Yep, Barnett.
Barnett, thank you. Senator Barnett, who is clearly, there's Trumpian influence anyway in the senator. I was wondering, would Vince have been able to write this book?
You know, it was kind of challenging because, so here's a weird story. That Christine Barnett, who's the presidential candidate, very sleazy presidential candidate, originally was Chris Barnett. She was a man. And I wanted to make sure that it didn't track to any particular political party or person. I didn't want to do that.
Right.
And it tracked a little too much to Donald Trump. I was afraid people would accuse me of trying to portray this as Trump. So I changed it to a woman about halfway through writing the book so that it would seem different than that.
Well, you know, that thought occurred to me that you might have, because her strategy is so like Trump. You know, she tries to villainize people, go after, you know, outsiders, divide and conquer. And she's up against an ineffectual president. So I was thinking about our ineffectual Congress and making an analogy. But really, we don't know how Vince would have been. How long has it been since he died?
About 6 years.
Right. So the world for Vince's world has changed very dramatically in those 6 years.
It's strange to think if you took a, you know, a time machine, that going forward 6 years, things would change this much, that Russia would rise up on the world stage and be a real threat to the United States, maybe more of a threat to the United States than it's ever actually been. You know, that politics would become this divided, that you'd have something like ISIS rise up and try to take and hold land. These are all things that Vince had never experienced.
Absolutely. Daniel Silva, I thought, was very prescient about Russia. He started writing in his Gabriel Alon series, A Renaissance Russia and so forth, several books back. And, you know, I think he saw. But other people were writing about China.
Yeah.
Brad Thor wrote a particularly good book, I thought, one of his best, Scott Harveth, about a Chinese infiltrator in the United States. I don't know if you read Brad, but
I do.
Remember the guy that was inside the United States? I can't remember
the
name.
He was like a double agent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I thought that was an absolutely super book. And then, you know, lots of people were writing just about the Middle East.
Right.
But Daniel, you know, there he was saying, whoop, it's going to be Russia. And you're right. Who would have imagined that? You know, you look at Britain. I said to my husband the other night, America and Britain were defenders of the free world. You know, defeated Hitler, defeated fascism, sort of the whole bit. And both of us are just in total disarray at the moment.
Well, the British, yeah, in particular, I don't know where they're going with that. I feel terribly. You know, I lived in Great Britain for a long time, and my father worked there with the government. And I also just feel terrible watching that. It's sort of this slow motion train wreck, and you can't take your eyes off it.
Well, it is a train wreck, and it's hard. You know, part of the problem, well, shouldn't talk politics here, but part of the problem is they've got Boris Johnson, who's like a rogue, and they've got Jeremy Corbyn, who nobody can stand. If Labour could get rid of Corbyn, then it would make a huge difference, but they seem paralyzed.
Yeah.
And I feel like we are paralyzed, you know, and it's just an interesting time.
It is an interesting time, and who would have ever thought the United States, which has done so well historically and continues to do so, could become so kind of angry and divided. I'm not sure what we have to be all that angry about. I mean, like you said, I just spent a year living abroad, and it definitely makes you appreciate what we have in the United States and how well this country is done. You know, my house was 500 years old, didn't really have heat, and everybody just blows that off in Spain. You know, think, well, of course you don't have heat. It's only cold here a couple of months, but it's really cold. And, you know, to think about all the benefits that we have here and how well we've done, I would have never predicted we'd end up in this state.
Well, part of it, I think, and, you know, I obviously didn't live in Britain as we transitioned from an agrarian economy into an industrial economy, the 18th century into the 19th century. But I was thinking about the Chartists and so forth, the people who got left behind when technology took them, the country, in a new direction. And I think that's a very large part of what we're seeing, is that people, you know, in what we now call Rust Belt cities, people who are in sectors of the economy whose jobs are disappearing or have been outsourced or being replaced by robots and on and on. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of fear and alienation as technology is moving so fast, you know, and they're getting left behind, and it creates an enormous amount of anxiety. I mean, it's hard enough, well, you and I were just talking, it's hard enough for me to even manage my phone, you know, I mean.
Yeah, to figure out how to get your car to park itself.
That too, right. So I can see, and you know, it might be interesting at some point. I love plotting books because, you know, editing books is actually what I do. It might be interesting to have Mitch, you know, look at that at some point rather than just all external threats. But the larger threats seem to be coming from within these days.
I think that's true. And that has historically not been something Vince did. And I don't know if he would do that. I think about that a lot, though, if I were going to write my own book. The internal threats are what really interest me, and the asymmetrical warfare that Russia's getting so good at. I mean, they're just gearing up for the next election. You know, they have incredible capabilities, but on the other hand, we keep falling for it. So I'm not sure what that says about us sometimes.
Well, we do fall for it, and the other thing is, if you can remember Florida, is that while we are technologically so advanced in some ways, we don't have the machinery to even count our votes.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't really actually know who won the Bush versus Gore election because Florida could not count its votes. So what does that say about us? You know, it's just pathetic.
It really is a strange situation, and an interesting situation to be a thriller writer in, because that's the setting you have to deal with. And how do you handle that? And in my case, I have to ask myself also, how would Vincent handle that? And it's hard to know.
Well, you do. And as a writer inside Vince's universe, you can't warp it. You know, you have to stay somehow true to Vince. I mean, you have to move forward. I spend a lot of time with the guys that have gone on and written in the Parker universe. So we have Isaac and Freddie Spencer. And up until this book, we've had Reed Farrell Coleman writing Jesse Stone, and both of them have stayed within Parker's design, but yet moved forward into this world, and that's really the challenge when you're writing Mitch Rapp, is that you have to remember Vince and what he might have done, but you also have to take him forward. Vince wouldn't have stood still.
No, absolutely not, and that's what I think some people forget. Like when I wrote Red War, it was very much about Russia. And people said, well, you know, Vince hadn't really written about that, but I thought he would have, though. You know, I mean, that's what was happening, and that's what Vince did. He took what was happening, and he wrote a really compelling story about it, and Russia was happening. And it's going to keep changing. It's impossible to predict 6 years from now. What will I be writing about? I'm terrified to think about it, really.
Even next year. Yep. I've had a lot of thriller writers say to me that they hope they live long enough to look back and write about this time because it has been so tumultuous and so dangerous. And none of us know how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to see. It's become so unpredictable that it's a little hard to write a book because, you know, most people don't think about the fact that you write them or you come up with the initial concept years before maybe potentially the book comes out. And so you have to, and certainly before the paperback comes out, So you can't be overtaken by history, but you've got to go right. You have to make it feel current and not be overtaken by history. And that sweet spot's gotten tough to hit now because you have no idea. I mean, we could be at war with Iran tomorrow. You just have no idea. If Trump has a doctrine, it's be unpredictable.
Very true. And also being a wartime president is more of a recipe for success through re-election. So it must be very tempting in that sense.
Oh, I hope not.
Well, I hope not, too. No. Anyway, moving away once again from politics. When you wrote your own books, do you feel that you had a different approach to writing than you have now writing the Mitch Rapp books?
I think my style of actually writing the books, how I get the books done, is about the same. But obviously, as you know, my books were really different than Vince's. Mine tended to be a little ambiguous and pretty geopolitical. So that's helped me, though, because it's pretty obvious when I'm falling into my voice. And, you know, what I don't want to do is write a Kyle Mills book with Mitch Rapp in it. So I want to write, you know, Vince Flynn book. So it makes it really obvious when I'm trying to do something maybe I wanted to do. And probably the farthest I've ever pushed that is the character, the Russian character Grisha Azarov, which is probably more a character that I would have written than Vince would have written. But I wanted to blend those two styles and have, in a way, it was kind of an opponent. It was Vince against me, you know, the two classic characters, really, a classic character that I would have written, one that he wrote.
So when you were writing your own books, I asked you this earlier, you were really writing for you, probably more than you were writing for fans or an audience, and yet writing for Vince, you have to take a different approach.
Yeah, it is. It's a very different approach. I wanted to write the best book I could, and that wasn't always the same book. So I've written everything from techno stuff to kind of more mystery to, I wrote one book, it was a first person sort of general fiction novel because that was what interested me at the time. And I had a lot of great fans and they loved them, and I think my fans liked that variety. But with Vince's stuff, you really have to think about his fans and what they were after and what made them passionate about his books and about that character and follow that path.
I think everybody likes the hero. And especially in our difficult times, we like the idea that there's somebody like Vince Rapp who can save the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are fun characters. I mean, that's why I read, you know, Vince's, I've been reading Vince's books since he started, and that's why I read them. It takes you out of the world a little bit, a world that's too complicated, where things never get resolved, where there's always politics and red tape and all that, and it cuts through all that. And that's what makes them really fun to read.
See, I have a theory that part of the reason the Marvel Universe has just surged up in the movies and so forth is that it's full of superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, part of it's the technology. They can do fabulous things. You know, they can have spaceships and people fly and they're monsters and all the rest of it. But also, you know, there's Superman, there's Batman, there's all these guys, you know, that when you need a hero, he shows up.
Yeah, yeah. And they're amazing and they always get the job done and they're really, you know, good people who want to do the right thing. And I don't know, you know, it's really kind of a sad thing in the United States right now because there are a lot of people like that. It's probably the majority of people, but that's not who you hear about. You know, you turn on the news and it's, you immediately want to turn it off because it's so horrifying, because nobody publicizes all the good things that happen in the United States and all the things that we have. And, you know, maybe this gets you to focus on that, but there are people like Mitch Rapp out there willing to give their lives for their country. And they are out there, and this is a way to publicize that.
I think that's the secret of Lethal Agent, is that, you know, Mitch is a hero, and he does something heroic, and defeats, because you have to have an antagonist in this role, otherwise there's no point, defeats, you know, the bad persons, and as a result, people tend to come together, you know, and that's a message I think that we all want to hear right at the moment. We're all hoping that something will occur I was thinking about Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds the other day. I mean, that was a, you know, an interesting experiment, but that was his thesis, you know, that the world was completely fractious until invaders, you know, space invaders came, and then everybody had to pull together to repel the invader. And, you know, that's a dynamic that's historically gone on for millennia. And maybe it's the one we need at the moment.
You know, it's very strange. Opponents have become not what they once were. You know, the Soviet Union was our enemy. They could shoot missiles at us. It was a very simple kind of white hat, black hat thing. And now Russia, they're very sneaky. You know, they're very good at asymmetrical warfare. Same thing with Iran. So they're never going to, they're going to stab you in the back, not in the front, and they've gotten very good at it. So we no longer have that very clear enemy where it's us against them.
Right.
And I think that's caused us to look for an enemy internally that isn't there, and to manufacture enemies. And maybe it's something deep in the human psyche that we like to break into tribes and fight with other tribes, but it's bizarre to see a lot of the anger and think that a lot of it's not really about anything. It's not even true.
You know, there's a school of thought called the Great Man School of History, in which you have to ask how much an individual can change the course of history and direct destiny. And you look at somebody like Napoleon or Hitler or something. And at the moment, we have these figures, you know, that maybe are taking us. We have Putin in Russia. Maybe it would be different without him. We have Trump here. It would certainly be different without him. We've got Boris Johnson, you know, doing whatever he's doing. We've got Netanyahu. The Israelis don't seem to be able to get rid of him. You've got the imams in Iran who, you know, you've got MBS in Saudi Arabia. You've got
Turkey is a mess.
You've got Erdogan. You've got what's his name in Hungary. And then you've got the guy in North Korea. So you've got a whole bunch of, you know, wannabe gods, you know, directing the world at the moment. And there's a cluster of them. It isn't even just like one or two. But, you know, they won't be around forever. And then you have to wonder what will happen, you know, because nobody lives forever. What will happen? You know, what would Russia be without Putin? What would, you know, if the Turks managed to get rid of Erdogan, will they go back to more of the Ataturk design? You know, more
or will
secular.
It be worse?
Or exactly. Or it could be the other way around. So it's the Chinese curse. We're living in interesting times, but it's nice that your writing thriller is sort of helping us try to make sense of it, or at least giving us an escape from it.
I hope so. I don't know. It is a strange time to be a writer, but that's probably true. Was true of the Soviets. It's always a strange time to live, and things are always changing. So I suppose that gives me an opportunity to. Finding ideas is not that difficult.
You're right. Well, each of us can only do the best we can. Thank you very much, Kyle. It's great to talk to you.
Thanks.